This is Michael Hansen. The Mind Web story for this half hour is The Worm by David Keller. One of the places it appeared is Fantastic Magazine for September of 1965. The miller patted his dog on the head as he whispered,
"We're going to stay here. Our folks, your ancestors and mine, have been here for nearly 200 years, and queer it would be to leave now because of fear."
The grist mill stood, a solid stone structure in an isolated Vermont valley. Years ago, every day had been a busy one for the mill and the miller, but now only the mill wheel was busy. There was no grist for the mill, and no one lived in the valley. Blackberries and hazel grew where once the pastures had been green. The hand of time had passed over the farms, and the only folk left were sleeping in the churchyard. A family of squirrels nestled in the pulpit, while on the tombstone, silent snails left their cryptic messages in silvery streaks. Thompson's Valley was being handed back to nature. Only the old bachelor miller, John Staples, remained. The mill was his home, even as it had served all of his family for a home during the last 200 years. The first Staples had built it to stay, and it was still as strong as on the day it was finished. There was a basement for the machinery of the mill. The first floor was the place of grinding and storage, and the upper two floors served as the Staples' homestead. The building was warm in winter and cool in summer. John Staples lived there with his dog, his books, and his memories. He had no friends and desired no associates. Once a year, he went to the nearest town and bought supplies of all kinds, paying for them in gold. It was on a Christmas day that he first heard the noise. Going down to the basement to see that nothing had been injured by the bitter freeze of the night before, his attention was attracted even while descending the stone steps by a peculiar grinding noise that seemed to come from out of the ground. His ancestors, building for permanency, had not only put in solid foundations, but had paved the entire basement with slate flagstones 3 feet wide and as many inches thick. Between these, the dust of two centuries had gathered and hardened. Once his feet were on this pavement, Staples found that he could not only hear the noise, but he could also feel through the flagstones the vibrations which accompanied it. Pulling off his mittens, he stooped over and put his fingertips on the stone. To his surprise, it was warm, in spite of the fact that the temperature had been below zero the night before. The vibration was more distinct to his fingertips than it had been to his feet. Puzzled, he threw himself on the slate stone and put his ear to the warm surface. The sound he now heard made him think of the grinding of the millstones when he was a boy and the farmers had brought corn to be ground into meal. There had been no cornmeal ground in the mill for 50 years, yet here was the sound of stones scraping slowly and regularly on stone. Going to his sitting room, he secured a walking stick of ash and went back to the cellar. Holding the handle of the cane lightly, he placed the other end on 100 different spots on the floor, and each time he held it long enough to determine the presence or absence of vibration. To his surprise, he found that while it varied in strength, it was present all over the cellar, with the exception of the four corners. The maximum intensity was about in the center. That evening, he concentrated on the problem before him. He had been told by his grandfather that the mill was built on solid rock. Evidently, some of the strata of stone had become loose and were slipping and twisting under the mill. The simplest explanation was the most reasonable. It was simply a geological phenomenon. The next morning, the noise was louder. The vibration was now powerful enough to be appreciated not through a walking stick, but through the walls of the building. The noise could be heard as well on the third floor as in the cellar. Staples tried to fancy what it sounded like, not what it was, but what it was like. The first idea had been that it resembled a saw going through oak. Then came the thought of bees swarming. Only these were large bees and millions of them. But finally, all he could think of was the grinding of stones in a grist mill, the upper stone against the lower. And now the sound was grrr, grrr, instead of bzzz or hmm. That morning, he took longer than usual to shave. He was more methodical than was his wont in preparing breakfast for himself and the dog. It seemed as though he knew that sometime he would have to go down into the cellar, but he wanted to postpone it as long as he could. Finally, he went to the mill and started down the steps to the cellar. The dog hesitated on the top step, went down two steps, and then jumped back to the top, where he started to whine. Staples went steadily down the steps, but the dog's behavior did not add to his peace of mind. The noise was much louder now than it was the day before, and the whole building was shaking. He sat down on the third step from the bottom and thought the problem over before he ventured out on the floor. He was especially interested in an empty barrel which was dancing around in the middle of the floor. The power of the mill wheel was transferred through a simple series of shafts, cogs, and leather belting to the grinding elements on the first floor. All this machinery for transmitting power was in the basement. The actual grinding had been done on the first floor. The weight of all this machinery, as well as the heavy millstones on the first floor, was carried entirely by the flooring of the basement. The ceiling of the first floor was built on long pine beams which stretched across the entire building and were sunk into the stone walls at either side. Staples started to walk around on the slate flagstones when he observed something that made him decide to stay on the steps. The floor was beginning to sink in the middle. Not much, but enough to cause some of the shafts to separate from the ceiling. The ceiling seemed to sag. He saw that light objects like the empty barrel were congregating at the middle of the cellar. There wasn't much light, but he was easily able to see that the floor was no longer level, that it was becoming saucer-shaped. The grinding noise grew louder. The steps he sat on were of solid masonry, stoutly connected with and a part of the wall. These shared in the general vibration. The whole building began to sing like a cello. And then the noise stopped. No more noise. No more vibration. Just a broken floor and every bit of the machinery of the mill disabled and twisted. In the middle of the floor was a hole where one of the pavement stones had dropped through. Staples carefully walked across and threw the light down this hole. Then he lay down and carefully put himself in such a position that he could look down the hole. He began to sweat. There did not seem to be any bottom. Back on the solid steps, he tried to give that hole its proper value. He could not understand it, but he did not need the whining of the dog to tell him what to do. That hole must be closed as soon as possible. Like a flash, the method of doing so came to him. On the floor above, he had cement. There were hundreds of grain sacks. Water was plentiful in the mill race. All that day, he worked, carefully closing the hole with a great stopper of bags and wire. Then he placed timbers above and finally covered it all with cement, rich cement. Night came, and he still worked. Morning came, and still he staggered down the steps, each time with a bag of crushed stone or cement on his shoulder or with two buckets of water in his hands. At noon the next day, the floor was no longer concave, but convex. On top of the hole were 4 feet of timbers, bags, and concrete. Then, and only then, did he go and make some coffee. He drank it, cup after cup, and slept. When the man woke, the sun was streaming in through the windows. It was a new day. Though the fire had long since died out, the room was warm. Staples listened. There was no sound except the ticking of his clock. So he slept for another 24 hours. This time he awoke and listened. There was still no noise. He was sure that by this time the cement had hardened. This morning he stayed awake and shared a gargantuan meal with the dog. Satisfied that the trouble was over, Staples took his gun and the dog and went hunting. When he returned, he did not have to enter the mill to know that the grinding had begun again. Even before he started down the steps, he recognized too well the vibration and the sound. This time it was a melody of notes, a harmony of discords, and he realized that the thing, which before had cut through solid rock, was now wearing its way through a cement in which were bags, timbers, and pieces of iron. Each of these gave a different tone. Together, they all wailed over their dissolution. Staples saw, even at the first glance, that it would not be long before his cement cork would be destroyed. What was there to do next? All that day, when hunting, his mind had been dimly working on that problem. Now he had the answer. He could not cork the hole, so he would fill it with water. The walls of the mill were solid, but he could blast a hole through them and turn the millrace into the cellar. Whatever it was that was breaking down the floor of the mill could be drowned. If it were alive, it could be killed. If it were fire, it could be quenched. There was no use to wait until the hole was again opened. The best plan was to have everything ready. The wall reached 3 feet down below the surface. A charge of powder heavy enough to break through would wreck the whole building, so he began to peck at the wall like a bird pecking a nut. First, a period of drilling, and then a little powder and a muffled explosion. A few buckets of loosened rock, and then some more drilling and another explosion. At last he knew that only a few inches of rock lay between the water and the cellar. All this time, there had been a symphony of noises, a disharmony of sounds. A constant grinding came from the floor, interrupted by the sound of sledge or crowbar, dull explosion of powder, and crashing of rock fragments on the floor. Staples worked without stop, save to drink coffee. A dog stood on the upper steps. Then, without warning, the whole floor caved in. Staples jumped to the steps. These held. On the first day, there had been a hole a few feet wide. Now, the opening occupied nearly the entire area of the floor. Staples, nauseated, looked down to the bottom. About 20 feet below him, a mass of rocks and timbers churned in a peculiar way, but all gradually disappeared in a second hole, 15 feet wide. Even as he looked, they all disappeared in this median hole. The opening he had been breaking in the wall was directly across from the steps. There was a charge of powder, but there was no way of going across to light the fuse. Still, there was no time to lose, and he had to think fast. Running to the floor above, he picked up his rifle and went down to the bottom of the steps. He was able to throw the beam from his searchlight directly into the hole in the wall. Then he shot, once, twice, and the third time, the explosion told him he had succeeded. The water started to run into the cellar. Not fast at first, but more rapidly as the mud and weeds were cleared out. Finally, an 8-inch stream flowed steadily into the bottomless hole. Staples sat on the bottom steps. Soon he had the satisfaction of seeing the water fill the larger hole and then cover the floor, what there was left of it. In another hour, he had to leave the lower steps. He went out to the millrace and saw that there was still enough water to fill 100 such holes. A deep sense of satisfaction filled his weary mind. And again, after eating, he sought sleep. When he awoke, the very first thing he noticed was the millrace. It was practically empty. The little stream of water at the bottom was pouring into the hole he had blasted into the stone wall hours before. The race had contained 8 feet of water. Now, barely 6 inches remained, and the dread came to the man that the hole in the cellar was not only emptying the race, but was also draining the little river that for thousands of years had flowed through the valley. He hastened over to the dam, and his worst fears were realized. Instead of a river, there was simply a streak of mud with cakes of dirty ice all being washed by the torrent of rain. With relief, he thought of this rain. Millions of tons of snow would melt and fill the river. Ultimately, the hole would fill and the water would rise again in the millrace. Still, he was uneasy. What if the hole had no bottom? When he looked into the basement, he was little reassured. The water was still going down, though slowly. It was rising in the basement, and this meant that it was now running in faster than it was running down. He ran up the stone steps to the second floor, built a fire in the living room, and started to think. The idea of the gold stayed in his mind, and the final result was that he again put on his boots and coat and carried the entire treasure to a little dry cave in the woods, about half a mile from the mill. Then he came back and started to cook his dinner. He went past the cellar door 3 times without looking down. Just as he and the dog had finished eating, he heard a noise. It was a different one this time, more like a saw going through wood, but the rhythm was the same. He started to go to the cellar, but this time he took his rifle, and though the dog followed, he howled dismally with his tail between his legs, shivering. As soon as Staples reached the first floor, he felt the vibration. Not only could he feel the vibration, he could see it. It seemed that the center of the floor was being pushed up. Flashlight in hand, he opened the cellar door. There was no water there now. In fact, there was no cellar left. In front of him was a black wall on which the light played in undulating waves. It was a wall, and it was moving. He touched it with the end of his rifle. It was hard, and yet there was a give to it. Feeling the rock, he could feel it move. Was it alive? Could there be a living rock? He could not see around it, but he felt that the bulk of the thing filled the entire cellar and was pressing against the ceiling. That was it. The thing was boring through the first floor. It had destroyed and filled the cellar. It had swallowed the river. Now it was working on the first floor. If this continued, the mill was doomed. Staples knew that it was a thing alive, and he had to stop it. He was thankful that all the steps in the mill were of stone, fastened and built into the wall. Even though the floor did fall in, he could still go to the upper rooms. He realized that from now on, the fight had to be waged from the top floors. Going up the steps, he saw that a small hole had been cut through the oak flooring. Even as he watched, this grew larger. Trying to remain calm, realizing that only by doing so could he retain his sanity, he sat down in a chair and timed the rate of enlargement. But there was no need of using a watch. The hole grew larger and larger and larger, and now he began to see the dark hole which had sucked the river dry. Now it was 3 feet in diameter, now 4, now 6. It was working smoothly now. It was not only grinding, but it was eating. Staples began to laugh. He wanted to see what it would do when the big stone grinder slipped silently down into that maw. That would be a rare sight. All well enough to swallow a few pavement stones, but when it came to a 20-ton grinder, that would be a different kind of pill.
"I hope you choke," he cried. "Damn you. Whatever you are, I hope you choke."
And the walls hurled back the echo of his shouts and frightened him into silence. Then the floor began to tilt and the chairs to slide toward the opening. Staples sprang toward the steps. And then from the safety of the steps, he witnessed the final destruction of the floor and all in it. The stone slipped down, the partitions, the beams, and then, as though satisfied with the work and the food, the thing dropped down, 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 left Staples dizzy on the steps, looking into a hole, dark, deep, coldly bottomless, surrounded by the walls of the mill, and below them a circular hole cut out of the solid rock. On one side, a little stream of water, a tiny waterfall, came through the blasted wall and fell below. Staples could not hear it splash at the bottom. Nauseated and vomiting, he crept up the steps to the second floor, where the howling dog was waiting for him. On the floor, he lay, sweating and shivering in dumb misery. It took hours, but eventually he warmed himself and slept. And while he dreamed, the dog kept sleepless watch at his feet. He awoke the next morning. It was still raining, and Staples knew that the snow was melting on the hills and soon would change the little valley river into a torrent. He wondered whether it was all a dream, but one look at the dog showed him the reality of the last week. He went to the second floor again and cooked breakfast. After he had eaten, he slowly went down the steps. That is, he started to go, but halted at the side of the hole. The steps had held and ended on a wide stone platform. From there, another flight of steps went down to what had once been the cellar. Those two flights of steps, clinging to the walls, had the solid stone mill on one side, but on the inside they faced a chasm, circular in outline and seemingly bottomless. But the man knew there was a bottom, and from that pit the thing had come and would come again. That was the horror of it. He was so certain that it would come again, unless he was able to stop it. How could he? Could he destroy a thing that was able to bore a 30-foot hole through solid rock, swallow a river, and digest grinding stones like so many pills? One thing he was sure of. He could accomplish nothing without knowing more about it. To know more, he had to watch. He determined to cut a hole through the floor. Then he could see the thing when it came up. It did. He was on the floor. Looking into the hole, he had saw it through the plank, and he saw it come. But first he heard it. It was a sound full of slithering, slidings, wrathful rasping of rock against rock. Then he saw it coming to the cellar and finally to the level of the first floor. And then he saw its head and face. The face looked at the man, and Staples was glad that the hole in the floor was as small as it was. There was a central mouth filling half the space. Fully 15 feet in diameter was that mouth, and the sides were ashen gray and quivering. There were no teeth. That increased the horror. A mouth without teeth, without any visible means of mastication. The circular lip seemed made of scales of steel, and they were washed clean with the water from the race. On either side of that gigantic mouth was an eye, lidless, browless, pitiless. They were slightly withdrawn into the head so the thing could bore into rock without injuring them. Staples tried to estimate their size. All he could do was to avoid their baleful gaze. Then, even as he watched, the mouth closed and the head began a semicircular movement, so many degrees to the right, so many to the left, and up and up. And finally, the top touched the bottom of the plank Staples was on, and then... And the man knew that it was starting upon the destruction of the second floor. He could not see now as he had been able to see before, but he had an idea that after grinding a while, the thing opened its mouth and swallowed the debris. He looked around the room. Here was where he did his cooking and washing, and here was his winter supply of stove wood, and a thought came to him. Working frantically, he pushed the center burner to the middle of the room, right over the hole he had cut in the floor. Then he built a fire in it, starting it with a liberal supply of coal oil. He soon had the stove red hot. Opening the door, he again filled the stove with oak and then ran for the steps. He was just in time. The floor, cut through, disappeared into the thing's maw, and with it, the red-hot stove. Staples yelled in his glee,
"Eh? A hot pill for you this time. A hot pill."
And if the pill did anything, it simply increased the desire of the thing to destroy. For it kept on till it had bored a hole in this floor equal to the size of the holes in the floors below. Staples saw his food, his furniture, the ancestral relics disappear into the same opening that had consumed the machinery and mill supplies. On the upper floor, the dog howled. The man slowly went up to the top floor and joined the dog. There was a stove on this floor, but there was no food. That did not make any difference to Staples. For some reason, he was not hungry anymore. It did not seem to make any difference. Nothing seemed to matter or make any difference anymore. Still, he had his gun and over 50 cartridges, and he knew that at the last, even a thing like that would react to bullets in its eyeballs. He just knew that nothing could withstand that. He lit the lamp and paced the floor in a cold, careless mood. One thing he had determined, he said it over and over to himself.
This is my home. It has been the home of my family for 200 years. No devil or beast or worm can make me leave it.
He said it again and again. He felt that if he said it often enough, he would believe it. And if he could only believe it, he might make the worm believe it. He knew now that it was a worm, just like the night crawlers he had so often used for bait, only much larger. Yes, that was it. A worm like a night crawler, only much larger. In fact, very much larger. Morning came. Staples mounted the ladder that led to the trap door in the roof and opened it. The rain beat in. Still, that might be a place of refuge. Then he heard the sliding and the slithering rasping, and he knew that the worm had come again. He waited until he told that the wooden floor he was on was being attacked, and then he went up the ladder. It was his idea to wait till the thing had made a large opening, large enough so the eyes could be seen, and then he would use the 50 bullets where they would do the most good. So on the roof, beside the dog, he waited. He did not have to wait long. First appeared a little hole, and then it grew wider and wider, till finally the entire floor and the furniture had dropped into the mouth, and the whole opening, 30 feet wide and more than that, was filled with the head, the closed mouth of which came within a few feet of the roof. By the aid of the light from the trapdoor, Staples could see the eye on the left side. It made a beautiful bullseye, a magnificent target for his rifle, and he was only a few feet away. He could not miss. Determined to make the most of his last chance to drive his enemy away, he decided to drop down on the creature, walk over to the eye, and put the end of the rifle against the eye before he fired. If the first shot worked well, he could retire to the roof and use the other cartridges. He knew that there was some danger, but it was his last hope. After all, he knew that when it came to brains, he was a man, and this thing was only a worm. He suddenly saw what it all meant. 200 years before, his ancestors had started grinding at the mill. For over 150 years, the mill had been run continuously, often day and night. The vibrations had been transmitted downward through the solid rock. Hundreds of feet below, the worm had heard them and felt them and thought it was another worm. It had started to bore in the direction of the noise. It had taken 200 years to do it, but it had finished the task. It had found the place where its mate should be. For 200 years, it had slowly worked its way through the primitive rock. Why should it worry over a mill and the things within it? Staples saw then that the mill had been but a slight incident in its life. It was probable that it had not even known it was there. The water, the grist mill stones, the red-hot stove had meant nothing. They had been taken as part of the day's work. There was only one thing that the worm was really interested in, only one idea that had reached its consciousness and remained there through 2 centuries, and that was to find its mate. The eye looked upward. Staples, at the end, lost courage and decided to fire from a sitting position in the trapdoor. Taking careful aim, he pulled the trigger. Then he looked carefully to see what damage had resulted. There was none. Either the bullet had gone into the eye and the opening had closed, or else it had glanced off. He fired again and again. Then the mouth opened wide, wider, until there was nothing under Staples save a yawning void of darkness. The worm belched a cloud of black, nauseating vapor. The man enveloped in the cloud lost consciousness and fell. The mouth closed on him. On the roof, the dog howled.